Live on the line. This is thecommentary.ca. Vancouver Sun columnist Daphne Bramham joins me now to discuss her new book, The Secret Lives of Saints, Child Brides, and Lost Boys in Canada's Polygamous Mormon Sect. It is a timely, riveting, and remarkable book on the polygamous fundamentalist Mormon sect of bountiful British Columbia. Published by Random House, the book retails for $32.95. Daphne Bramham has been a columnist with The Sun since 2000, and in 2005 won the Commentator of the Year Award at the Jack Webster Awards. She's written a great deal about this subject in the paper, and I am pleased to welcome to the Plant on the Line program Daphne Bramham. Good morning, Ms. Bramham.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us. How did Bountiful get on your radar?
Well, I had written a series of stories about trafficking in women and children in 2004. And I had focused pretty much on the traffic that's coming from Asia into North America and had really done nothing about North Americans being trafficked. And I had an email from a reader, all in caps, that said, why don't you ever do anything about Bountiful? Because there are a number of girls that are being transported back and forth between the community in Bountiful, British Columbia, and the communities in the United States. And these are fundamentalist Mormons who practice polygamy.
And that's Janice Andrews who wrote you that email, correct?
Jancis Andrews, yes.
Jancis Andrews. Yes. Now, what was her connection to this?
Well, she's been a longtime activist. She had done a lot of lobbying in the 1970s to clean up child pornography in the Vancouver area. And she's retired. She lives on the Sunshine Coast, and she'd seen a documentary about it. And she just got very angry about it and started learning all that she could. And eventually she ended up filing a complaint with the Human Rights Tribunal in British Columbia.
And then so you've written now somewhere close to 100 columns or more?
I've written more than 100 columns, yes.
The reaction to your work in The Sun has been what?
It's been amazing. I mean, I have had only, out of the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of emails that I've received, I've only had a couple from people who said, why are you bothering with this? Why don't you do something more important? Why don't you take on an issue that's more universally concerned about, such as health care or any number of other things? But honestly, it's been a handful of people who are saying that I shouldn't write about it. The interesting thing about the email that I've received and the comments I've received is that in the beginning it was almost all women who were responding to it, and it was only after I started writing about the boys who are subtracted from the community, who are kicked out of the community and moved out of the community, that men started to become engaged in the issue as well.
Has there been reaction from those people who live in Bountiful, and by that I mean people like Winston Blackmore?
Winston Blackmore is very much aware of the work that I've been doing. He claims he doesn't read newspapers, but he seems to know pretty clearly what it is that I've been writing about. He remains pleasant to me. He told someone that he actually thinks I'm a nice person. It's just that I have to sell newspapers.
Sort of the religious background of all this, Mormonism, we learned a little bit about it, in depth with Mitt Romney running for the presidency. The Church of Jesus Christ and Latter-day Saints. That's Mormonism, essentially. That's its full name, correct?
The group that I'm writing about is a breakaway sect. It's a group of people who claim to be the one true Mormons. They claim to be the ones who most closely follow the doctrine that was set out by Joseph Smith, who is the founder of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. But the Mormons, the mainstream church, the LDS church, renounced polygamy, or it suspended the earthly practice of polygamy back in 1890. And ever since 1890, there have been these groups of fundamentalists who simply say that the church was wrong, that there was no way that that any prophet after Joseph Smith could renounce polygamy. So they have continued to practice polygamy despite being, many of them having been excommunicated from the mainstream church. And what's happened over the period of time since 1890 is they've had a whole series of prophets. There's all sorts of splinters and schisms and so on within this fundamentalist group. There are a whole bunch of independent polygamists that wander around in Utah, mostly in Utah and Arizona. There are an estimated 38,000 people in the western United States who practice polygamy based on the revelation that, that Joseph Smith claims he had about polygamy.
And what you focus on in the book is just the Canadian aspect of it in terms of what happens in Bountiful. That's the group that, that's headed by Winston Blackmore.
No, the book is really about the group that now calls itself the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And it was to that group used to control all of Bountiful, and its bishop was Winston Blackmore. But there was a split that came in 2002. It was a power struggle over who would succeed Rulon Jeffs, who was the prophet of the FLDS at that point. And Warren Jeffs, Rulon's son, managed to finagle his greatly debilitated father, Rulon, into excommunicating Winston Blackmore in 2002. Rulon subsequently died, and Winston Blackmore, who was next in line for the succession, by that point had been excommunicated. So Warren Jeffs basically proclaimed himself the prophet of the FLDS Church. So what the story is really about how the Mormons first came to Canada, how the fundamentalist Mormons then migrated to Bountiful, and how they became part of this larger FLDS, and then how the community itself is divided between Winston Blackmore's followers and the FLDS who continue to follow Warren Jeffs.
In terms of numbers, what's the split there? What's the difference?
It's about two-thirds, one-third, two-thirds following Winston Blackmore, about a third following the FLDS. And the difference between them is, in some ways, the difference between being Canadian and what we like to think the difference is between being Canadian and being American. The Canadian version is kinder and gentler. The Warren Jeffs version is much more extreme. It's much more tyrannical. Many of the people who've fallen, hardly anyone from the Warren Jeffs group in Bountiful has been seen in Creston, which is the closest town. Winston Blackmore's people, they come into Creston all the time. They participate. Some of them are on the search and rescue team. But they're still quite separate. I mean, Winston Blackmore's people are not, they're not part of the community of Creston in any meaningful way. They participate in some ways, but they still see themselves as being very separate from what they call the Gentiles, who are the outsiders, people like you and me who don't belong to the group.
And Jeffs is now in prison, correct?
Yes, he is. He was convicted in Utah in the fall of 2007 on two counts of being an accomplice to the rape of a 14-year-old girl. And he was sentenced to two terms of 5 years to life in prison. In Utah, they have this very odd system where they have a board of paroles. And so after Warren Jeffs has been incarcerated for 3 years, he will go before this board of paroles, and then they will determine what length his sentence will be, whether it's 5 years or life or somewhere in between. And in the meantime, while he's serving those 3 years, he has been he's been transferred to Arizona, and he's awaiting trial there on a handful of charges, including sexual conduct with a minor.
Well, what's his connection with that raid on that Texas compound that we've been reading about in recent weeks and hearing about on television and watching?
Warren Jeffs built the compound. It was Warren Jeffs' idea that after he began being prosecuted, after the charges were laid in both Arizona and Utah, he decided that he wanted to move the group out of those two states because it was just getting too difficult for them to practice in secret. So he insisted that they build and relocate to what he calls the Yearning for Zion Ranch in El Dorado, Texas. And there he built the first ever fundamentalist Mormon temple, which is that big white structure that we've seen so many times on television recently. And when they have done, when CNN was given the opportunity to do a tour through the compound there are many pictures of Warren Jeffs there. So he is considered to be still the prophet to all of those people who were within the compound, including the 437 children who were taken out of there.
There are BC children amongst those 437?
Yes, there are Canadians amongst that group. How many, no one is quite sure, but I have been told that there were at least five Canadian women who are living within that compound, and assuming that they have children, because almost every woman who's married in the FLDS has at least a couple of children, more likely to have five or eight children. So yes, there will be British Columbia children in that group for sure.
And how those Canadian women got there, and how American women have come up here in recent years as well, or throughout history, is it largely because of trafficking?
Well, it may not legally be trafficking, but it certainly appears to be trafficking. What happened? I've spoken to a couple of women who came up to Bountiful. They thought they were actually coming to their sister's wedding, and it turned out that they were actually married the same day as their sisters to the same man. Many of those pairs of sisters actually ended up marrying Winston Blackmore. But these girls came up thinking they were coming on a vacation, and then they ended up staying here. And they've never a large number of the women in Bountiful are in fact illegally in Canada. They never applied for immigration, largely because they're not likely to get immigration. Most of the children within this group, boys and girls, only go up to grade 9 if they're lucky. So these women who are coming up here at 16, most of them have a grade 9 education. They're not going to in any way qualify to become citizens of Canada. So they come up here, and in the past, the immigration department and the immigration appeal board, in the past they were allowing them to stay. After they had 5 or 6 children, they would apply on humanitarian and compassionate grounds, and they would be allowed to stay. But since in the last few years, since people have started to really understand what's going on in this community, the immigration department has said no way, they're not going to let them stay. Any of the appeals have been turned down. 3 women have been deported. Each of those women had 5 or 6 children. And because the Canadian government is trying to, it seems, to say, no, we're not going to have this anymore. We're certainly not going to have illegal immigrants. Whether it's because they're polygamous isn't really clear, because we have this in British Columbia. There hasn't been a prosecution in polygamy. Winston Blackmore openly talks about having multiple wives. He went on Larry King Live, and he said that he's had several young girls who are basically underage girls as wives, and yet he's never been prosecuted.
Why not? Why we've had 2 sort of different provincial governments in the last 10 years, 15 years or so. Have they just been unwilling, and why have they been unwilling?
Well, what happened in 1990 was the NDP government of the day had 2 legal opinions from former chief justices that said that the anti-polygamy law may in fact run contrary to the guarantee of religious freedom in the Constitution and the Charter of Rights. And on the basis of those opinions, the NDP government said, okay, we're not going to do anything. And that's when Winston Blackmore bought a copy of the Charter of Rights and framed it and put it on his wall and started marrying dozens of girls. But since that time, there have been all kinds of other legal opinions, and indeed the federal government itself had a legal opinion in 1990 that said, no, the anti-polygamy law is fine, because what the Supreme Court of Canada has consistently said is that there are limits to the practice of religion. There are no limits on what you can believe. I mean, you and I can believe the most outlandish things, but we can't practice our religion if it harms others. And so one of the tests that would have to happen if polygamy were taken to court, if someone were charged, is one of the tests is there harm? Is there harm in polygamy? And the United Nations Human Rights Committee has determined that, in fact, polygamy is inherently harmful to women and children because it denies them their equality rights. Women who are in polygamy, women are usually not allowed to choose. They're usually forced to marry. They're almost invariably forced to marry much older men rather than men their own age. And so all kinds of human rights activists have declared that polygamy is inherently harmful. We've had Supreme Court justices saying that polygamy is one of those things, along with bestiality and child pornography, that is just, you don't have to prove harm, that it's just so offensive to public sentiment. It's just offensive to human nature. So there is this question about whether the anti-polygamy law would withstand a charter challenge. But one of the things that they don't talk about and wasn't talked about in 1990 was that the equality rights section may in fact trump the religious rights section. And that's the thing that nobody is clear on, because everyone seemed to be so focused in 1990 on guaranteeing religious freedom. But we've limited the rights of all sorts of other groups, including the Jehovah's Witnesses. I mean, we've in British Columbia in the last couple of years, a number of children have been taken away from Jehovah's Witness parents in order to have blood transfusions. So it's a very mixed bag, and why we haven't prosecuted, I think, in British Columbia, I think for a long time, there just wasn't enough public pressure. I think in Canada, in the United States, now with the Texas raid, with Warren Jeffs in jail, I think people are really starting to understand that there is a big problem with polygamy. It's not benign. It's not just three consenting adults that are getting together. This is, it just isn't that.
Because if you talk to polygamists, they would say that their goal is simply to multiply, to procreate. But it is really about sex, isn't it?
Within this group, it's definitely about sex. It is about procreation. It's also about power. It's about old men, the patriarchs, having all the money, all the wealth, all the property, all the girls, all the children, and kicking out any of their competitors. I mean, if there's a boy that's flirting with a 16-year-old girl and he's 16, well, he'll get kicked out. If he's listening to rock and roll music, he'll get kicked out. Any excuse to get rid of the boys, because when you've got people like Warren Jeffs, who's got somewhere in the range of 100 wives, that means 99 men don't have a wife. When you have somebody like Winston Blackmore, 26 wives, 25 get none. So it creates a society that's very heavily skewed. It's a very heavily, there are hardly any men in the community. There are all these women and children. Plus there are all these children. Winston Blackmore has 116 children. Do we want a society where men are having dozens and dozens and dozens of children and they can't afford to look after them? I mean, who can afford that many kids? Not many people.
Well, where does the money that Winston Blackmore and Warren Jeffs, that they seem to have, where does that come from?
Well, in Canada, Winston Blackmore's kids, and Winston Blackmore is eligible for the child tax benefits. His kids are in, and his wives are entitled to collect on the daycare supplements. All of them are entitled to welfare if they qualify for it. They get universal health care, so all of the mothers having babies, if they're Canadians, their babies are paid for it. If their kids get sick, if they're injured, they go to hospital. They don't pay anything for that. Not that they're, I mean, and it's just a, they're getting the same that every other Canadian is. Their schools, the independent schools, pays half the cost of those kids to go to school. In the United States, there's been a huge, almost all of the people in Colorado City Hilldale on the Utah-Arizona border, almost all of them were on welfare, so they're getting a ton of money on welfare. Because they controlled those two communities, all of the public school money went into the church. So there's been a great deal of public money going into these groups. But to be fair, they also work very hard. What they do with the boys before they kick them out or encourage them out or they simply leave, they work the boys for very, very low wages. $1,000 a month to work in logging mills, in forestry, and construction, and so on. They get paid very poorly. They're supposed to tithe it back to the. They tithe back to the church. They've got all sorts of special assessments against them to make sure that the prophet could build his big temple down in El Dorado. So they use the boys certainly for wealth creation, and they use the men who stay as well.
There are incidences of intermarrying. Isn't there?
What do you mean, intermarriage?
Like sort of like relatives marrying one another?
Oh, it's very, very common for first cousins to marry first cousins.
Well, what about disease and that sort of thing?
In the United States, there is a genetic deficiency called Fumarace deficiency, and what that is is that babies are born literally with almost no brain. They're missing an enzyme that creates the brain matter, and so these babies are born largely with just fluid in their heads. So they're multiply handicapped, physically, mentally. They can't. Many of them are blind, deaf. They can never walk. They can't even sit upright. So it's one of the largest. It's got the highest percentage of Fumarace deficiency in the Western world. So that's one of the problems. The intermarriage as well is causing, we know that it's one of the causes of Down syndrome, so there are Down syndrome children within the group. It hasn't been so bad in Canada. I'm told that there are, I know of a couple of children with Down syndrome, but I'm told that there's not really very much physical or any other handicaps that have been noticed yet. But the group in British Columbia was only formed in 1946. It was started by 6 or 7 families. So the gene pool is getting quite shallow, even though it's being enhanced by bringing some of these girls up from the United States.
What about the instances of plural wives by other religious groups? Did you see that in Canada much?
Well, I'm certainly no expert on any other groups, but what we do know, of course, is that in the Quran, in the Islamic holy book, men are allowed to take up to 4 wives as long as they can afford to keep them. And the Ontario government last month admitted that it is in fact paying welfare to the plural wives of some Muslim men living there. And interestingly, it is paying the welfare not to the women, but into the bank accounts of the husbands. And I've been told by Muslim women from Ontario that there is a rising incidence of polygamy amongst Muslim men, and that's a great concern for them.
Hey, how has this story affected you? You've written a great deal about it. You now have a book on it. Throughout, I guess, the frustration of it all, the events of recent weeks, has it been sort of even a valedictory almost that what you've been writing about has come to light, has come to the fore?
You know, the stories that I've heard from these people are they're so sad. They're just so overwhelmingly sad. Even for the children who left, who are now adults, even if they weren't physically abused or sexually abused, there's just so much sadness amongst the people that leave that, you know, I take no great pleasure in the story at all. I'm deeply saddened that nothing has happened sooner and that so many of these children have had to suffer. Between 1990 and today, you know, in the time that the BC government has done nothing, the population of Bountiful went from 400 to 1,200. That's a lot of children who are raised in at least an emotionally abusive culture. And it's you know, a whole lot of children who aren't ever going to be able to live up to the potential that they have, because it's just so hard for them to break away. So it's been, for me, it's just a very long, sad story that unfortunately I don't think is going to end anytime soon. But I think that I take some pleasure and I guess a little bit of credit for the fact that perhaps now people they don't walk past these girls in Creston as easily as they used to. They no longer think that maybe it's okay for 16-year-old girls to have babies within this group, and they don't think it's so great that Winston Blackmore has 116 children. And I take some credit for that. But as I say, there's no champagne corks popping at my place over this story. I think the other thing that I would say about what this story has done for me is it has made me realize just how fragile the equality rights that we have, how fragile and how easily those rights can be taken away from us if we're not careful.
Indeed. Daphne, congratulations on and continued good luck on your work and with this book. I do thank you for coming on today. It is a frustrating and distressing story that continues, but as you said, very important that we pay attention and continue to learn more about it.
Well, thanks very much for having me.
The book is called The Secret Lives of Saints, Child Brides, and Lost Boys in Canada's Polygamous Mormon Sect,